For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice, and open the door, I will come in to him, and will sup with him, and he with me. And the Spirit and the bride say, Come, and let him that heareth say, Come, and let him that is athirst come, and whosoever will, let him take of the water of life freely. Friend of mine, what a privilege it is to have you tuned in today. Thanks for tuning in to the broadcast, Think It Over, and it gives me another opportunity to invite you to let the Lord Jesus come into your heart. You see, he is not waiting for you to seek him. He has been seeking you for years. And when you respond and say, Lord, I surrender. I admit that I'm a sinner. And I know that you went to Calvary's cross so that I could be cleansed of all my sins. I want you to come in and take control in my life. And moment by moment and day by day, I want you to be Savior and Lord in my life. When you invite him in, he will come in, and he will, as long as you allow him, he will transform your life. I'm a living witness. He'll continue to work on your character until you look just like friend of mine, invite him into your life now. To those of us who have invited him in, we do it anew each day. And little by little, he changes us until people want to know him because they have met us. Oh, friend of mine, let him come in. Open the door. Don't run anymore. And what a difference he will make in your life.
Lord, when there's nothing else we can depend on, how good it is to know that we can depend on you. You've been our counselor when there was no one we could talk to. You've loved us through all the passages of our lives. You've given us wisdom to teach our children, strength to face the hard times, and joy all along the journey. We've learned that when things seem impossible, you're always up to something in our lives. That something is eternal, and it's for our good. You truly have been our hiding place through all generations.
Thank you.
Jesus said to his disciples, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." I'm so glad I learned to trust you. Now give me grace to trust you more.
And this is the broadcast, Think It Over. And our guest today is Mrs. Perrette Mills. It's just a privilege having her as our guest again. Because we are dealing with the family, dealing with children, dealing with parents, and what a blessing it is. This whole quarter in the Seventh-day Adventist Church is dealing with the family and making choices and so forth. But so it's so important that the family is Christian in their treatment of each other, starting with your own life, then starting with your own family, your companion. And what a difference it makes when a family loves the Lord and respects and loves each other. Mrs. Mills has taught in approximately 14 cities over her lifespan in terms of teaching. She's almost ready to retire. After 45 years, she's taught K through 12. She's a certified guidance counselor. She's been a principal. And at the present time, she graduated from Oakwood University. And presently, she's working on her doctorate in educational leadership. Sister Mills, it's a privilege having you on today again.
Well, thank you, Elder Kelly. Great being with you every time.
Well, today we're going to be talking about consistency, the role of consistency and routine in a child's life. Now, remember, each one of your children are special to God. Please, parents, I beg of you, don't have any favorites. Jacob made a favorite out of Joseph, and it brought so much pain to his life. Rebekah and Isaac had favorites. Isaac's favorite was Esau. Rebekah's favorite was Jacob. All of your children are special and precious. So, when speaking of consistency, Sister Mills, and routine, what exactly are you really referring to?
Well, there's so many areas in our lives, each of us, where we, in our minds and hearts, plan to do something, and we plan to do it on a regular basis. I guess that's because our world is structured on schedules and on making sure we follow a certain plan, from the job market to classrooms to churches. We all have schedules, and sometimes those time schedules can be headachy and really push you to maybe miss some items because we messed up the time schedule. But what we really want to do is make sure that our children understand how important it is to stay with a schedule. What that does for them is unbelievable. You might have had, when you were growing up, certain routines that you had to perform at a certain time of the day, or maybe from the time you got up, there was a certain practice. This routine that I'm talking about with children is something that doesn't always happen today. You know, when you come home from school, this is the plan. You do A, B, and C, then you do A, B, and C. And children need that, not just after school, but even from the time they get up in the morning, their bedtime routines, their morning routines, there are dinner routines, their family practices and routines, and that consistency helps build a child's security and stability at a very, very young age, because they can pretty much anticipate what comes next. And of course, the opposite happens when we don't have that routine. You know, children will grow up not knowing what's going to happen, when, who's going to take care of them, who's going to pick them up, who's going when they can do this particular activity, when they cannot. Rather than scattering their life, as parents, we want to organize their lives so much so that they can be surrounded by the secure notion that there's a time and place for everything, and it's going to happen at a certain time and at a certain place. I'm very hard on consistency because it's so broad. It's not just in the home. In the church, we should have consistent programs and activities for our children. In the school, there should be consistency with the home and with the church so that we can have those practices continued. A lot of times we cause confusion in children because one thing goes on at home, another thing goes on in the community, and they don't coincide. Or one thing goes on at church and another thing goes on at home, and kids get mixed messages. Or, more importantly, as an educator, something goes on in the home and a whole different thing goes on at school. Mm-hmm. This is why Christian education is so important. So there are a lot of elements of routine that children need, but more importantly, we got to make sure that as parents, we ourselves are forming habits of consistency, so that the children will learn by example and by our actions and performing those things with them routinely. Mm-hmm. God fills us with our needs of consistency. He will give it to you so you can fill your child with that very same need.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that consistency is important because in a child's life, because it helps to develop a sense of security. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Security and stability. When we're not consistent with that, it does just the opposite. And one of my favorite authors, Ellen G. White, says very clearly in my favorite book that she writes, Child Guidance, she said parents have to be consistent with their rules. Sometimes a child can do one thing you promise that something's going to happen and it doesn't happen, or mom will say one thing and then dad will say something else. And you know, you have to have a standard, and children have to understand that at a young age, not just when they're babies, because that's when we really want to get a firm grasp on that and set a strong foundation. But we don't lighten up as they get older. You know, we try to be consistent all the way through their life. You know, there might be some things that you might adjust, but you don't change and totally break or let go of. Things always have to be adjusted. But there's certain principles and values in the home and in the school and in the church that should not vary so much that they're not recognizable by the child as a part of their daily, weekly, monthly, yearly routine.
Mm-hmm. So you are saying that consistency is needed in the early, middle, and the teenage stages of life.
Oh, yes, most definitely, most definitely. You know, that's why traditions are so important. Because that's one you can take from the earliest stages of life to the middle years, to the teen years, to the adult years. Traditions are like glue that keep families close. And so that routine is a big routine that might happen once a year or twice a year or once a month or even your weekly Sabbath routine. Those things mean so much to children, and that's what they reflect on, and that's what comes back to your mind when they go against your training. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that love is in those routines. And now the child is being warned just by the simple fact that that love is surrounding them in those routines. And they're being reminded that, hey, I can't do this thing and sin against my family, my God, mm-hmm. my church, my friends. So that routine has everything to do with holding the whole person together.
Could you share with us some examples of, let's say, routine in the course of a child's life during the day?
Yes, I remember when I first had my son, my first son, my concern was that, you know, the doctors tell you about a scheduling time for the baby to have the milk, or there'll be a time when they'll want to be changed, and there'll be a time when they are going to be tired. Well, that schedule thing stayed on my mind because, you know, when a baby first comes home, they cannot tell you anything. They can't really show you anything, and there's really no pattern. So things have to just happen naturally. But once I saw at a very young age, I mean, I'm talking about 2 months, once I saw that at a certain time the baby was hungry, a certain time the baby would wet the diaper, or a certain time the baby would need to be held, I could tell because they set their own schedule. So when I talk about making sure we set routines, I'm talking about trying to do the same thing at the same time pretty much every day to help that child to anticipate in the future what's coming so that they will not be surprised. Because sometimes it's a scary thing when things change. A new person comes in to watch them, or you have to leave suddenly, and, you know, they are in a different environment. You're taking them somewhere and dropping them off. See, those kind of things can be, believe it or not, traumatic. That's a big word. But even at the youngest age, when a child is used to you. So the routines have to center around child care in those early years. The routines have to center around feedings and nap time, and it has to be there in place. One thing that people don't realize, you hear babies cry out of control sometimes and they're not sick or hurting. And a lot of times that's for a need that we don't even realize. That need possibly could be that the child has some uncomfortableness emotionally. And we can take care of that by meeting the need of the child. Once you find the routine, once you find that schedule, you can meet the need of the child before they even have to have a diaper change or have to eat, or right when it's time. You be there at that time, and you won't have that crying going on all the time. Yeah. What happens is the child, the need is met, and all they know to do is to cry when the need is not met. Yeah. So rather than wait for the need not to be met, take care of it at the time, or as close to the time as possible. And you sometimes don't see those tantrums at all. I know that's the way it was with my first child. Once I realized it, I met the need at the time that I knew, you know, the child would need it. I hope that doesn't sound too confusing. But the bottom line is, we teach children to manipulate by waiting till they cry to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So they cry when they're hungry, then you feed them. They cry when they're wet, then you change them. They cry when they're tired, or now then you put them to bed. Why not meet that need at the time that you generally can tell the schedule, so that we don't teach that child to cry for what they want? Because we get mad when they're 17 or 16 or 12 and they're crying because they want a video game or they want this. And because you said you're not going to give it to them, or because you didn't give it to them, they have learned all their lives to cry for what they want. So we can flip that script. We can definitely change it.
Yes.
But that's what I mean when I talk about the younger ages. As children get older, the routine should center around the things that you want that child to take care of that are important. You're
mm-hmm.
teaching children how to prioritize. You might say, okay, when you come home from school, make sure you take off your school uniform, hang it up, put your clothes in the dirty clothes that need to be washed, be sure to do your chores, and together we'll do your homework, or we'll, you know, then dinner time is at a certain time, and then after you eat dinner, we'll go for a walk, we might play on a trampoline. Bedtime, you're going to take your bath around this time. And I'm not saying it has to be really so rigid that it has to be at the very second. But one thing should follow another, should follow another, should follow another. I'm going to tell you real quickly, too, Elder Kelly. I have a son, my youngest son. We got into a big spat because his three little girls are precious to me, and I hadn't seen them in about 4 months. And I raced to Boston to see my grandchildren. I mean, I raced. And when I got there, it was right at their bedtime, about 15 minutes before. But I didn't know that. So about 7:45, I, you know, saying hi and kissing all over them and loving them and just having a good time. And 8:00 came. I mean, I had barely got to see them, and he insisted that they had to go to bed at that minute. And they were happy. They were ready to go to bed. But I was upset. I said, wait a minute, I just got here. He said, I know, Mom, but you'll see him tomorrow. I said, no, God. He said, I'm here, and I came all this way. Can you just one time just not let them go right now? Can they go like a half an hour? He said, nope. We got them on a routine and a schedule. He said, Mom, it's like clockwork. You'll see it while you're here. As soon as I say bedtime, they go right to sleep. And if we break that, we have messed up their whole routine. Now, I knew what he was saying. My head believed what he was saying, but my heart was upset. But the next night, I watched him tell those children, it's time to go to bed. And they said, yes, Daddy. And they ran to start their routines in the bathroom, ran to the bed for their story. I mean, they went right to sleep. And it was so miraculous, I dare not say another word about bedtime.
Yes.
But we want children to be happy when they're in their routine so that they will learn how important it is that they get older.
That is just wonderful. And I'm just so grateful, Sister Mills, that we're talking about this consistency and routine in a child's life today. What a blessing that is. And after our next song, we're going to come right back. Our guest today is Sister Perrette Mills, who has been teaching for 45 years. She's a certified guidance counselor. She's taught in grades K through 12, and what a blessing it is to have her as our guest today. So please stay tuned, will you? Thank you so much for staying tuned to the broadcast. Think it over. The Aeolians were singing City Called Heaven. What a blessed. And it's real, and Jesus is coming again. We're talking today with Mrs. Perrette Mills, who is a certified guidance counselor. She's a parent advocate and works for the North American Division in Teaching Parenting. She's a teacher for 45 years. It's just a privilege talking to her today about consistency and routine in a child's life. Sister Mills, what does this have to do with the child's overall development as they grow into adulthood?
Well, you know, I guess I can reverse it and just explain that inconsistency really puts holes in the life of a child. It helps them grow up looking for something to fill the emptiness. They grow up very needy. And one thing we want to do with young people is make sure that they feel whole, because you can tell in a classroom in a minute when a child is missing something or when a child feels less than. And in order to build them from the inside out, I'm talking about character development, you want more than anything for your child to feel like your parents are right there for you, your caretakers are right there for you, anything you need is right there for you. But when there are inconsistencies, children not being picked up on time from school, being the last one there, being left or being dropped off, or not having the same caregivers in the home. It might be mom and dad up until a certain age, and then there might be a divorce or a split of some type, or death in the family, a parent could pass away. It's not even a thing where somebody's at fault. It's a matter of making sure you realize that consistency is still needed even when you don't have all that you need to raise the child, mm-hmm. whether it's money or a person. We don't want our children to grow up needy, because that's the first sign of behavior that is unacceptable to society. When that happens, I'm going to tell you, we're human beings, children and adults. When we need something, we'll find a way to get it. If it was something for our physical health, like food or sleep, people say they wouldn't sleep on the street, but if you had nowhere to go and you're tired, you'll find somewhere to sleep.
Yes.
People say they would never eat out of a trash can, but when you're hungry, you're going to find a way to find some food, whether it's in a trash can or you know, some people steal to get good things. Our human nature wants needs to be met and cannot survive otherwise. It's no less true of emotional needs. When our emotional needs have to be met, we will do whatever it takes, including acting up in class, in the classroom. I got the teacher's attention now. It might not be positive attention, but I got it. I got my time. The stuff I missed at home, or I missed in church when they didn't allow me to do such and such. And that's why the church is part of this whole picture, because we have to realize that we too are responsible for these young people, and we can damage them or we could build them. It's up to us to put our heads together and build that hedge around our young people. It's more than a village these days. You need about 10 villages to build children in today's society. So when I talk about what this has to do with them as they grow into an adult, these are going to be practice behaviors. Depending on how young this whole starts to show, now we're talking about habits. Because if they get into the habit of trying to get that need met and they grow with that habit is now an adult too. And we have adults, you know, that are hard to deal with.
Yes.
Because those things were not taken care of when they were younger. So I really, really am concerned about the young people that I have run across who did not know where they were going after school, did not know who was going to be taking care of them for the summer, you know, did not know what was going to happen as far as their education. They wanted to come back to church school, but they couldn't, financial troubles or whatever. I mean, those kind of major changes when a child gets used to something, you know, those are life changes for little ones.
Mm-hmm.
The life changes for us may be bigger, but, you know, we go through bigger life changes. But for a child, those changes are hard to stomach. And I can tell right away in a child's behavior that something's going on at home that's different. I had an A student in my class, straight A's. I mean, behavior, straight A's, the citizenship, straight everything. And it wasn't even 2 weeks ago when I realized that this was an entirely different child. And then what happens now with us, we've got to jump into meetings with parents where we're not asking them to tell us what's going on at home, and it's uncomfortable, but we want them to know that we need your child back. So if you know that some things need to go back to the way they were, whatever you were doing before, it was working. Let's keep that up. I don't even go into details. Let's just keep up what was, because we want that child to be whole. And I can see the child starting to be divided. See, parents don't realize when there's turmoil in your life, when there's division in your home, when there's any type of anything that upsets or uproots the routine, you have divided that child. You have split that child.
Mm-hmm.
And the child now has to work around those problems that, you know, parents are even dealing with.
Yes.
So we've got to protect our children by making sure that they have as much routine and consistency as possible. Home, school, community, church, family, friends, you know, all
yes.
of that as much as possible. Oh, no, my child doesn't eat that. But he can't go so into another place and eat it. Oh, we don't play those games. We might not say it that way, but, you know, so, well, we don't participate. But then you put them in hot water where they do things that you don't want them to do, and when the child partakes at 16, then you're going to get mad at the child, when really we have to just be careful of the water we put them in. Is it boiling hot? From public school to allowing them to go with their friends without checking everything out? We put them in situations where the temptations are there.
Yes.
Now, you know, I have another remedy for that, but I'll tell you about that in a little while.
All right. Now, generally speaking, then, what are some other important key points for parents to ponder when intentionally rearing their children?
Well, you know, consistency is number one in my book, but I got so many others. I'll give you a few quick examples. A lot of times we're very negative with our children, and we don't even realize it. I remember my son reminding me of that. I'm thinking I'm doing something positive, but the words we use have negative tonation. Like, how many times do we say the words not, never, no, shouldn't, couldn't, wouldn't, don't? How many times do we say that? And we don't realize we're saying it, and it sends a message of negativity and a cloud of negativity over our children. And it's so easy for us, because we live in such a sinful world, because sin is on us, it's in the air, it's all around us. It's so easy for us to spot the negative. But what we have to start intentionally doing as parents is start accenting the positive, paying attention to the positive to balance out how many times we say no or not or shouldn't or couldn't or whatever. I read an article many years ago, and it stated that in the matter of a 25-minute conversation with a child, we use about 13 to 17 negative words, and we don't even recognize it. What we have to do, and we used to have this program called Looking for the Good, you have to catch kids being good. You have to catch them. You have to look for it. You have to search for it, and you have to say it, because we're pouring and feeding all this stuff into their mind. And if we don't balance that out or even get rid of most of the negative and pour in more positive, that's the type of child you're actually going to be raising, a child who continues to feed on negative things, and then they'll give to others what they've gotten from you. So I believe that parents should accent the positive and ignore some of the negative.
Yes.
Secondly, with reading, I have this thing about reading, and I always have parents ask me, how can I get my child to read more? Number one, you got to read. You have to be a reader. They have to see you reading. Most of the parents who ask me that are not readers. And when children see you reading, not only does it encourage them, you probably have been reading to them from the day a child comes home, before the child comes home from birth, when you're carrying the child. Start reading. Start reading. Read to them every night. Just read to them. Make them anticipate the imagination of the stories that you're saying. Just where they can't wait till you read that story. And you watch what happens. When they learn to read, not only are they going to see that they're working their own imagination, they're going to want to read to you a bedtime story every night. So it would be so important if we could understand how important that is in the development of a child. A lot of kids, you know, we all know that when kids are not great readers, they don't do well in school. Reading, of course, is the basis for everything. But to encourage fun reading, and I always tell parents, it doesn't always cost money because I can't afford the books or I can't get to the library, it's too late at night or whatever. You can say anything you want to say. We do what we want to do. But when it comes to reading, we must find a way. I used to take my children to Books A Million and Barnes & Noble on Thursday night. We like the library. Books sometimes kind of old in our little neighborhood. They want always new books, and they want always interactive books. But I wanted them to enjoy reading. We would go to Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and we would just read, and they'd go through any books they want. Couldn't always buy them, but they could read as many books as they wanted. Their books were science, on any subject, science, interactive books, where they could actually do the activities in the book. There were books where you could hear and listen, and CDs and tapes, and there's all kinds of things that they could do with sound. And then there were books with touchy-feely books for the baby, so they could actually see, even though the animal might not be there, they could see what they feel like. We have to do what we call interest-based reading to children that don't like to read. If your child does not like to read, number one, you start reading. Read with them, to them, and let them catch you reading. Number two, make sure that you find out whatever they're interested in. I don't care how crazy it is, whatever the subject is, from dolls to trains to sports, whatever they're interested in. Start getting magazines and books just on that, or surround them with that in a store or a library, and just let them build their own interest in those things. Start there. In some kind of way, we have to get our kids more involved in loving, not just liking it, not just doing it because it's an assignment, but falling in love with reading. We will change our world if our young people will start picking up books and really, really making a difference in their own lives. But it starts with us as parents. It starts with us as parents. And the last, well, there's a lot more, but of course we see today, and I'm really sad about this, that in our society, children control the parents, and the parent wants to be the child's friend. Now, this is a pet peeve of mine, but Kierkegaard, a sociologist from, I guess it was the 1800s, said then that it was amazing for him to come to our country and to see how the children are in charge of the parents, and that was in the 1800s. I can't tell you how much worse it must be now. If he saw it then, how much worse it probably is now. But some kind of way, parents have to understand that your child is your friend when your child is an adult. But right now, you still must be the parent. The friendship is always going to be there because you love that child. But it's growing. It's a growing in an undertone. It's not in the forefront where you let your child do what you would do. Parents have to take charge of the children again, and we're losing that. And one more, too. A lot of times I teach children how to speak in public or how to lead song service or how to do something that will show leadership skills, from, you know, definitely showing a talent. Whatever they do, I tell them, whatever you do in life, especially when you're moving into leadership, do it with enthusiasm. And not just for parents, but for anyone listening. You get what you give. If I'm going to be a song leader and I want to have a rousing song service, I have to show the enthusiasm of a rousing song service leader. I cannot get up there any kind of way and sing. I have to really believe and be involved and passionate about what I sing. And you will get back what you just gave. And that lesson is for a lot of things in life, not just for, you know, making presentations. But in the home with children, you're having worship. We have to enjoy worship. It needs to be enthusiastic. It needs to be exciting. I want more than anything for my children to love and enjoy worshiping God. But it cannot be, no pun intended here, a routine just to have it done. It's not just that kind of routine. We have to make that an exciting, consistent routine. You can't have worship one day and not have it the next day. You can't put your child up front and say, I want you to be a leader, and then you yourself are not showing them how to be a leader. And then when you do, you're not putting your all into it. We can't get so complacent when it comes to raising children that we're not intentional about every word we say and everything we do with them. Mm-hmm. There's no time for that. because it will show in them as they get older. There are some other things, too. I guess the best one I can leave you with is that the greatest gift that I always tell people that can give their children is to show love in the home. It's for husband and wives to love one another, genuinely love their mate, just genuinely love it, and the child needs to see that. That's the greatest gift you can give a child. If it's just you in the home, they still need to see love with you and your guests, your family, your friends, the other siblings in home. Love unconditionally has to be in that home because, again, the child is going to give what the child got.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's just exciting talking about these areas that you're mentioning because we always go back to the fact of unconditional love. We always go back to the fact that each child should be looked at when you're talking to them. We always go back to the fact that we should spend quality time with each child. We always go back to touch how important that is. So this is just additional building on the unconditional way of showing love to our children, who in turn will later on become parents themselves, should the world last that much longer.
Exactly.
It was so good of your son to not allow you, even though you came in just a few minutes before they were going to bed, it's wonderful that he was consistent and said, Mother, you will see them tomorrow.
That's what I was saying. I'm sorry. He did that because that's what I did with him.
Yes. And he didn't deviate.
He did what he did.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, now, listen, I have another question before our next song, and that is, do you have any other tidbits that you may have a grave impact on raising children and teens, or have we already just dealt with them?
Well, there are so many more, but I do want to say a couple more that
surely.
That we missed. And I think I said this on the last broadcast, but I can't emphasize it enough. A lot of parents think that they can start disciplining their child and correcting their child and raising their child in the right way once the child gets to be 5 or 6 years old or maybe 4 or 5 years old. But from the time that child is born, you can actually start pouring into your child. Mrs. Ellen G. White is a good author that I admire, and I trust her counsel because it's been so, so helpful to me. But she says, again, in child guidance, that we have to discipline our children before the age of one. I remember my mom telling me when she was carrying me, I kept going to a certain part of her side that would really hurt, and I would kick and I would kick, and she would just tap me on that little side to kind of move me over. And she consistently tapped me on that side until I would stop kicking. And she said it actually worked. And a lot of times we don't realize it, but there are things that you're doing to discipline a baby that's just still carrying. But once they're born, there are some things that you can do. Now, when I say discipline, I'm not talking about punishment. I'm talking about giving direction. I'm talking about discipling behavior and making sure that we know that the child's character is developed by the end of age 3. So we don't want to, like, allow them to get away with this. You have to be stern and consistent and strict on certain things before the end of the age of 3, because there's only 2% of their character to be developed after the age of 3. And so the more you put in at that time, the more intention you put in at that time, the more you're directing that child's character towards your values. And then before the age of 7, that last 2% is developed. By the end of the age of 7, the child's whole character, who they're going to be for the rest of their life, is set. And only God through conversion and baptism can that's when you see a different person. You've heard people say that. Oh, is that the same God he used to do? It's a miracle. Conversion is nothing short of a miracle.
Yes, it is.
Because characters don't change unless God comes in and works that miracle for you.
Yes.
It's something from the inside out that has to happen. So that's one that I always have to share with people. And when it comes to disciplining children, per se, some kind of way, we have to recognize how important it is to be consistent with that. We leave that out all the time. We will let them get away with it sometimes, and sometimes we don't. That cannot happen. When we say something, we must stick to it. Parents must be firm and consistent. And don't say you're going to do something or take a privilege away or, you know, and then not do it. All we're doing when we're inconsistent is teaching our children how to manipulate. Oh, at church school, they do it this way, and the kids really get it together. But then when they go to church, they do it another way. But then at home, you know, we can get away with it here, you know, or vice versa. You want it to always be that everyone is on the same page. And no, it's not going to always happen. I shouldn't even say always. But for the most part, you want as much of the routine that goes on at home, that goes on in church, that goes on in school to be the same. Yes. So that's the other piece of discipline that I did not want to omit. Discipline
right.
needs to be consistent.
Yes.
They cannot get away with it one place. And even if it's among your family members, you go to grandma's for the summer and we can do whatever. But when we come home, we are teaching our children to be two different people, and they play a game. And if they play it on the family, they will play it in society.
Yes.
And again, we as adults know that for a fact, because we have to work with and sit on boards with people who might have that type of mentality. So those things are really, really something to look at throughout the child's life, not just in younger years, but to look at that throughout their life so that they will grow up to be able to give that same type of consistency when they're a parent.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's just so interesting to hear you share these points. But, you know, there comes a time when the person has to be converted. Sometimes they have not been brought up in any way the way that they should have been. They may have come out of a background that had nothing to do with prayer, Bible study, or worship. But then there's
That's
grace.
Right.
Then the grace of God comes in. And if we yield our wills to Him, He is able to change us. But there are some things that will be there for a long time because they were not put in when the child was younger. But I'm just so grateful. After our next song, we're going to come right back. Our time is running out, but we just want to come back and talk with you just a few more minutes before our time is gone.
Sure.
Please stay tuned. This is the broadcast. Think It Over. You shared along the way. That was Dr. Cheryl Galley singing, Will He Know You? Sister Mills, it's a privilege having you today. Our time is fast moving out, but I just want to ask, are you available to present this parenting information at conventions, camp meetings, or other venues?
I would love to. I do. I have been doing it for a while now, and now that I'm retiring in 2 months, I'll be even more available.
Yes,
indeed. I am very much so available to do that, and I can leave some information if others want to get in touch with me about that.
Yes, ma'am. I think you ought to just give it, if you don't mind, because by the time I ask you your last question, we won't have any more time. So why don't you just share it with them now?
Okay. My email address, and this is the name of the presentations that I do under the company Children's Ministries Services. And my email address is M as in Mary, Y as in Young, the number 4, A as in Apple, T as in Tom, M as in Mary, S as in Sam, my4atms@aol.com. That actually is, those are the initials of my children, so I get a chance to, you remember it a lot easier. So my4atms is my tagline. And I can be reached at this number, 256-457-4766. That's 256-457-4766. And I would love to hear from you if I can help you in any way meet the needs of the people in your location.
Yes. Well, I'm just so grateful. You know, I've had the opportunity to have you on the broadcast on several occasions. It's just a privilege having you on because there's nothing like talking about the family. You know, in the book of Malachi, the 4th chapter, he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to their fathers. You know, God's going to bring our families together before he comes. And sometimes I want to say to the parents, when you have not done the right thing to your child or for your child, and it has come to the surface, God has brought it to your attention, go back and talk to them. Go back and ask forgiveness. You can't change the facts, but what it does, it gives them an example of what it means to be sorry and to be repentant. And I've had to do that. And many of you need to do the same thing. At the same time, continue to be consistent and continue to let God guide and direct you. Sister Mills, our time is just about gone, and I'm going to ask you to give us a short thought and then have our closing prayer, if you will, please.
Yes, I definitely want to share something with the listeners that I can actually email to them if they write me. There are some behaviors that you are looking at with your child that might look unhealthy. I have a list of those behaviors that require immediate assistance and attention. And I also have a list of very healthy behaviors that you might notice in your child. What I always tell people in my seminars is to compare the two. See, check off which characteristics belong to your child. And the one that has the most checks, you really, really, really want to pay attention to. But the number should not be close. If it's about 30 things on each list, 30 items on each list. If you have 25 and 25, that's not good. But if you have 10 on the unhealthy side and 25 on the healthy side, that's extremely positive. And you can work on those 10. Depending on what they are, they should dissipate because you're going to be intentional about them. I like doing this with parents because we like to give hope. You know, things happen, and we might not have known some things before, but we know now.
Yes.
And when we know better, we try to do better. We try to improve.
Yes.
And so there's always, always hope with Jesus Christ. There are always answers.
Yes.
We have to search for them, and I'll help you search for them. No, I don't know everything, but God does, and he talks to me.
Yes.
He talks to you. And he will share it. My one concern that I want more than anything for everyone to kind of hold on to is please know that we have to feed our children emotionally. so that these holes, if they try to come up, they'll be taken care of right away. That is, always give your children plenty of eye contact and have them look at you to help build their self-esteem, to help build trust. Number two, give them plenty of physical contact. Help them to know that they don't have to go anywhere else to get their hugs. They can go, you know, and hug their teacher, and that's fine. But we want our children to be so filled with physical contact that they don't have to go out searching for it and begging for it and trying to get that attention by doing wrong things. So I'm talking about positive touches, shaking their hands and taking their, doing arm wrestling or going for a walk holding hands or rustling their hair or tickling them. Or boys need wrestling, lots of, you know, they love that. Fifth through seventh grade, it comes to an all-time high. They just need positive touches. And lastly, focused attention. Each child in your family needs your attention at least 1 to 2 hours a day. Don't have 20 children because there's not that many hours in a day. But if you got two, you got four, you might be doing pretty well. I know it's hard, but children feed on that. And if you want your child to stay close to you forever, if you want them to always follow your values and your truths and the principles you set forth by God in your home, feed them emotionally, and they cannot hurt you. They cannot. They won't. And that is my prayer for each of you, that you will raise your child in a way according to God's plan and that they will all be saved, because he gave us that promise. He said, I will save your children, but we too must do all that he asked us to do to make sure we see him in peace. God bless you all.
Would you pray for us, Sister Mills?
Yes. Father God, we love you so much and we're so grateful that you are all-knowing. Lord, we pray now that your wisdom will spread over this audience in some way that they will have their answers today, tonight. You can give them the peace that they need to know that you do all things well. Please bless the homes that are listening in and meet whatever concerns they have with joy and peace. We love you and thank you, and we ask that you would save us when you come as one big happy family, not just from this earth, but in heaven with you one day. In your name we do pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Sister Mills, and thank you so much for listening today. And don't forget, the true object of life is ministry. Your children were born not only to have special talents, but they were born to have special work in terms of ministry to people. May God teach you how to help them to be a blessing to people in their lives and in the world for Jesus' sake. And so, until next time.